Welcome back to another episode of the Inspire Health Podcast, and we are really, really excited to have Pamela Arellin with us today. We recently came across Pamela's work, and if you haven't come across it, I think you're going to be in for a real treat. This is going to be a really fun episode. So Pamela's been immersed in the realms of multidimensional semi-trance and trance channeling for, I believe it's been over four decades since she's been about five. And Pamela's unique focus lies in her encounters with what she refers to as humans from the future. Intrigued by clairvoyant visions that revealed accurate yet sometimes unsettling world predictions, Pamela delved into bilocation, a form of astral travel. Her quest was to connect with individuals in the future who could shed light on the visions that she was currently experiencing. So we've asked to bring Pamela on the show today so that we can have a conversation around, I think, her form of channeling and the information that she's receiving. She's been able to connect with Christ consciousness beings, and we've just been listening to some of the work that she's done. I think it's really timely. I think it's really beautiful. And it's also gives people an idea of what we can even do right now to create the kind of timeline that we want to in the future. So Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, both of you. Such an honor. And thank you for accepting me onto the show. I love your work and I love what you're doing. I love your authenticity, your compassion, and your passion as it stands. It takes a lot of strength in this world to continue to share light and be positive, and to provide practical advice as well. So my work tends to seem impractical at first until we look at the practical ways to change it. And I wanted to kind of marry these views together in a way, to look at how we could perceive life in the spiritual realm a lot more practically than we ever have before through the use of the impractical, because that's what bilocation is. It is incredibly weird. It is unusual. It doesn't seem practical. It doesn't even seem believable. But my goal in spirituality is to think about how we can function better in our minds, our bodies, how we can function better as family units, how we can begin to see each other as a family unit, everyone as a family unit, how we could have a lot of reverence towards Earth, to see Earth itself as our family and all the beings that inhabit it. And that's where our work intersects. So I am so happy to be here.
I definitely think that's the message for the times. It's, you know, even when we see or we hear certain predictions of where things are going, it ultimately, what's really going to, at least from my perspective, what's really going to make any changes is our perspective on how we see everything. You know, we put up a quote a while ago by David Suzuki, which was really beautiful. And I can't remember all of it, but it was around the idea that, you know, when we start to view the mountains as deities, as opposed to something that can be mined for its ore. You know, when we start to see the flora and fauna as kin, you know, rather than something to be used, it's like from that change in perspective, action will then organically shift. I think tolerance will change. I think boundaries will change. Everything just starts to move in a different direction. So that's what I love about hearing some of those pieces, is it sort of brings some perspective back to us, like, okay, well, what do we need to do, boots on the ground personally in our own lives, to actually bring about the type of vision that we're really wanting?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we have in common, all three of us on this little soul family team together, because I feel that way already. I know we were talking about how we just instantly gravitated towards each other and towards our work, and it wasn't easy. Like, our schedules were intensely full and we had to like go back and forth, but we were each so excited about being able to be live today and to talk about how we can make those shifts. Boots on the ground, as you said there, means a lot to me, because in my field, most people are talking about how to send love and light and meditate the problem away. And I'm just going to call this as it is. There's nothing wrong with love and light meditation, and goodness knows we need a ton more of that. And we also need people who are willing to make pragmatic changes in this temple of the body, in their households and families, in their local environments, Just something that I feel like the things that really trigger me into a deeper conversation here today are so simple. For instance, I was out in the line at Starbucks the other day, and I'm coming out of it, and I saw this little mother goose, and she was kind of like sitting there by a little pond, and it was a tiny little man-made type of pond, and she looked pretty happy to be there. And it, for a moment, there's just this little channeled message that came through me, and I was so excited to see her looking happy to be there. And then I looked around, and there was empty buckets, cans, Starbucks cups disposed, plastic everywhere, all around this pond. And then I saw babies, and I connected with her for a moment, because I connect with animals just like I connect with any other beings in the future or in this timeline. And I heard her heart, and she was like, "These are my babies. This is my pond." And we were having this little telepathic thing, and I said back to her, "It's so dirty." And she said, "Yeah, what are you going to do?" I felt like stopping the car and cleaning the pond. And I regret that I didn't. It was freezing and we had to go somewhere. And I just regret that there was no place for me to pull the car over and get out. And just, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know what? Can we just go home and get a trash bag? You know, this is like the practical level of boots on the ground that I noticed about your work that I really respect.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you saying that, because some of the changes and the decisions that we do have to make are not comfortable. Like beyond the meditation, beyond the love and light, we do that on a daily basis, on a nightly basis. We do meditate. We find a sit spot with our children as well. We feel like that's an important tool for them to have in the toolbox and to actually bring in the divinity that is an aspect of ourselves, but more of it within our bodies and hence on our planet. Mm-hmm. But we do make difficult decisions that have to be made. We do have those difficult conversations that most people shy away from or don't want to have. We do sometimes raise our voice, backed by a whole lot of fierce love, and speak things that we feel need to be said and not censored. So I really appreciate you saying that as well. I'm wondering, Pamela, if we can kind of start with, for people who are not familiar with how your process even works, if we can start with a bit of background on, you know, what happened at the age of 5 and how did you come about into stepping into your abilities and gifts?
Just a short little life history for them.
Oh, it's been such a long journey, and I don't feel that just because I awakened at age 5 makes me any different than anyone who awakens at any point in time. I just wanted to start there. But it wasn't that I immediately just accepted everything. It was that my world was so wide open to seeing the truth. And I really didn't have too much of a choice. You know, we grew up extremely poor. And we were in a single-wide trailer in the middle of nowhere in deep rural South Carolina, you know, swallowed up by woods and, you know, some unpaved roads and the real natural life. And our idea of play was, mom said, go outside. The sun's up. Why are you in here? Unless, you're bored? Here is a broom and a mop. We didn't have video games to sit down and entertain us and all of these things. So we played with dirt and animals, and we learned about compassion, and we learned about respecting Mother Earth. We climbed trees. We did all the things. And I was a normal kid in that regard, already climbing to the top of the trees at age 4 and a half. And my mother looking out going, to my cousin, I told you to watch her. She's at the top of the tree. And that same year that I climbed to the top of that oak tree for the first time was the same year of the awakening. And my life has had a deep remembrance and reverence for trees for some reason. My entire journey, every time I have another samadhi experience or deeper awakening, it has to do with a tree first. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's just my particular path with nature and my connection to it. So after that tree experience, I remember falling asleep, and we had like my parents had a full bed and my little, I think my brother was like maybe 10 months or so at the time. He was like a little toddling baby just pulling up on the rails of the crib. So his crib was next to the door. And then my little twin mattress was across from him. And all of us were sharing this room. And the light came on. You know, I slept a lot with my covers above my head. And I remember peeking out of this little daisy-covered bedspread. And the light came on and I was kind of annoyed, kind of like, who's getting up to pee now? And we had this this door, because in old trailers in America, when you pull the door, sounds just like, and everybody wakes up and they're all like, blah. That didn't happen. It was just a big light and the door was closed and there was just this being there. And it wasn't what I thought. So I pulled the covers back over my head and started praying. And our family was deeply religious. So I was like taught that if I see something, I am to rebuke it in the name of Jesus. And we started doing the Baptist prayer. And I was like doing the stuff and the light wasn't going away. So I pulled my head down and it was still there smiling at me. No, no, no. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. Pull it back down. There's a little bit of that going on. But then once I fully pulled down my covers, it was smiling and there was so much joy and love that I just instantly gravitated towards it. And it motioned its hand and I walked over and it touched me here. And I instantly just felt like I wanted to bow and it touched me here and said, now you see. And when that happened, there was no ceiling. There was no dimensional, how can you say it, like awareness of, you know, 3D. Like I wasn't looking at here's the door, here's the ceiling. Everything was just open all around me as if my bedroom was floating through the cosmos. I could see things above me, beings floating around, different. It felt like I was in a world and they were in my world. People think about spirits being like, oh, they're in your world. Why are they here? What do they want from me? I look at it from that moment. It was like, wow, actually, we are all sharing space. And that was my first awareness. And then it said, now you hear, touch my ears. That was more difficult because there was shrill sounds and unusual sounds. It felt like it took many years to adjust to sounds. And I've been very sound-oriented since then. And then now you feel, it touched me here. And then I cried. I was getting visions of other lifetimes that I had had, that my parents had had, that people I know had, and they were painful lifetimes. It wasn't like what I was feeling was, oh, feel overwhelming love. I was feeling the suffering of humanity, and I still do. That's still a really tough part of this process and this journey. And I also felt love, but it was this paradox of here's the love and here's the other side of it. Here's the love, but here's the hate. Here's the love, but here's the genocide. You know, here's the love and here's the rape. It was all there. And I had to kind of look at it in this way without a judgment, without an attachment, without a fear. And when I began to see that, I did become afraid. I did begin to judge. So then the angel touched me on my head here and said, now this is a choice. Will you choose to know more about this? And I said, yes. And from that moment, that's when the judgment was released. The attachment was released. The fear was released. And that's why I appear so neutral about most of the things that I encounter from that point on. And that was the beginning of the journey.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with NasalGuard for pet lovers. NasalGuard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try NasalGuard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about NasalGuard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad,
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line. Ships Registry. The Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
You know, when you were talking about that, it reminded me a little bit of almost like the life review process that sometimes people would talk about when we did a series on life, death, and beyond. And when they had crossed over, almost like experiencing everything.
The near-death experiencers.
Yeah, the people that had crossed over and come back, and talking a little bit about this life review process where you almost kind of feel all the extremes of everything that had kind of taken place. But they would usually say, but you were sort of able to do that from a place of unconditional lovingness, I guess, so that I imagine that perspective would be a little bit different on what it would feel like. But that must have been intense to feel the depths of both sides of it.
As a five-year-old too, that, how was that? Like, how did you come out of that experience when you woke up?
Well, I wanted to go tell my mother, and remember, religious family. My parents were a little more open than the rest, than say their parents or anyone else. So they didn't say, oh, that didn't happen. But they did say, oh, you saw a being. Did it frighten you? What did it say? Did it say anything that frightened you? I'm like, no, not really. I felt good. You know, and they were just kind of like sharing with me what I should do if I become afraid and things like that. And but visions continued, and those beings didn't go away. It's not like they had had an appearance and then they're gone. This is a being that I see every single day of my life, and all the beings that showed up are there. And unless I tell them not to be there, they don't leave. Granted, there are times when I ask that I not experience it, but even that's hard to turn off.
Pamela, I know a question that comes up a lot, and this is something that I remember even earlier on when speaking with, and I imagine for you with the process of channeling, when you're connecting into, and I'd like to dive in next to the future personalities that you're able to connect with and how that plays into the work that you're doing. How do you know, what is your sort of process for being able to discern when something is beneficial, when something is manipulative, when something is malevolent? And I know one of the concerns I've heard back,
even true or false,
because this ties back into not just channeling, but I feel like this is something that collectively a lot of people have really become disconnected to. And so how do you know, what's your litmus strip for when something is true and seems accurate? Because I feel like whether you're listening to channeling, whether you're listening to politics, whether you're listening to anything out in the world right now, I feel like the process has got to be the same.
Or similar.
Well, first of all, you have to identify your source. So I was taught at that age, and I was deeply trained into this. It's called the Law of Three. So what you do is you have to understand your source, and you ask that source a question three times. And you have to ask it in the same words, with the same intention, with the same vocal inflection, etc., three times. they are meant to answer in the same words, with the same feeling, with the same vocal inflections. And that is where discernment begins. Because say, if you asked, are you Jesus? Because that was one of the first beings that I began to connect to. And the being says, I am that one you call Jesus. And then you ask again, the same question, are you Jesus? And it says, I am the one you call Jesus. There's a difference. All beings know the law of three. All beings. So they cannot, a lie cannot get past that.
So Pamela, then outside of that, so that's got some specific rules then that sort of fall within that realm almost. How would you support people in the regular day then, as far as a bullshit meter almost, so to speak, as far as when, because I feel like this is
we all need a bullshit meter.
What often happens is then I find most people just go, I don't know. And then they're just confused. And then what happens is I feel like it's just then easy to be led wherever by anybody. So how would you know, what's been your process with that to sort of help discern? I've asked this many times to different people around the process of truth and falsehood, you know, and being able to navigate that. Cause I feel like it's a tightrope sometimes, but I feel like it's such an important thing at these times to be able to connect into that, at least in that moment, be open for things to evolve and change. That's the next thing. But what's your process with that?
The answer is very catalyzing and not popular. I'll proceed with that. I had to learn about the law of paradox. Truth is not actually what we're seeking. We are in times of unreality where illusion is profound, and sometimes that illusion is very creative and beautiful and helpful, and sometimes that illusion is harmful and terrifying and toxic. And we are that barometer. The first decree of the mystery says, know thyself. Start there. And if you don't even attempt to discern yet. Don't attempt to get to know this, get to know this. Some people call it the higher self. I like the word soul, just so I could take back a religion for 4,500 years of a disgrace word. Let's take back that language for ourselves, because it's very human, right? The word higher self implies something's better than something else. I feel like the ego is created equally to anything else and incredibly useful. So I don't believe in, say, getting rid of the ego and things. The ego can be incredibly useful, just like our body is such a useful barometer in discernment. And the body immediately tells you things. It just tells you. So many people who are connected say, I got chills. You know, I know what you're saying is true. It doesn't make sense in my heart. There's no practical evidence of it. But you know what you know. And if you don't know, you don't know. So let's not pretend that we are here to know everything. That takes humility to admit that we're not here to know everything. That certain knowledge is so deep into a rabbit hole of illusion that it's only going to create a negative effect. And there are a lot of rabbit holes in the spiritual communities right now.
Oh, lots of rabbit holes all around. I think I'm 100% on board with what you said there. I feel like at least in our personal journey too, it's been, it almost gets impossible with the layers of intricacy with everything to know what everything is in the mirrors. But what we've kind of done is almost like slowed things down more and more and really tried to get to know ourselves. And I mean, we did a series that initially was probably our least successful series as far as numbers, called Know Thyself. And we actually interviewed some of our favorite guests and just asked them, what would be certain questions that you would pose to help reveal a deeper sense of who we truly are, that we can
two to three questions.
Yeah. And that was really what the series was around. And we've actually taken that series and created a free course for people, because I feel like that is the most profound thing we can do. And you can go on our website, download and join, and you can get it for free. And it takes probably about 10 weeks, but it's just literally like, let this stuff go in and go into a deeper dialogue with yourself. At least from there, I feel like then we're bringing more of who we really are into the world, rather than this
the programming.
Yeah,
the
which I think can get really tricky. And it's a work in process. You know, it's like every day I think we're just gaining deeper and deeper insights into who we really are and staying open to allowing that to evolve and change.
Yeah, I concur. And there's such a paradox because we are in a place, a lot of the beings that I count, that I channel, call this a galactic library. And there's so much paradox in that because there will be love enshrouded with fear and compassion enshrouded with hatred. And there's so much. So for me in my journey, it's not been about what's true. It's been about what's helpful for me and what is absolutely distracting and harmful. And I've had to be deeply discerning and aware of that versus saying the black and white of this is true and this isn't. There are some truths in this world, but there are some lies buried in truths and some truths buried in lies. So that's just the paradox of how Earth operates. So I've stopped trying to figure out what's true. And I want to figure out what is helpful and what is loving and what is useful for our process as a whole, not just for me, but I asked myself a question, and this is how I really got to know myself and my purpose here. I was told by Archangel Raziel, that's the first being that I saw that I was explaining to you, that smiled and had on the white robe and the golden sash. And he said, so when you want to know what's true, ask what's true for you and all. If you want to know what's helpful and loving, ask what's helpful and loving for you and all. If you want to know what serves you and all. And if something doesn't fall in that perimeter, chances are it may not be true. Or there could be some truth in it that's for someone else on a different journey and perhaps not my journey. It's okay that we're all on different journeys, you know?
Pamela, I had maybe a vision, maybe a dream a while ago, and I have to tell Jason these things right away or else I forget them. But it was basically that our planet was covered in this dark web, like this black dark web. And I didn't know how exactly to place it until, you know, these past few months as we're kind of excavating different things. I'm coming to the realization, just as you kind of mentioned, the way in which things are set up is not entirely as we had previously perceived it. And it's now just coming to a deeper knowing by many of us. And so at the same time, you know, this world is still a pretty beautiful place, like that bird that you witnessed, or, you know, we look around us on Vancouver Island and the trees that we're surrounded by and the bodies of water and the animals that we're surrounded by. And we are supported, but there's this other piece too, that we're kind of here, and in a lot of ways, deaf, dumb, and blind. Like, we haven't been privy to all that we can know. And so what you're doing when you're channeling is you're kind of piercing beyond the veil, beyond that web, and allowing yourself to make contact with beings who are not held back by it. I don't know. Can you explain that process a little bit more? Why is it that even as a humanity, I feel like we're seeking more the guidance of channelers who it is that they make contact with, you know, whether it's high frequency beings, angels, and what have you, they're not physically here on this planet. What is the relevance of that?
It gives us access to the deeper wisdoms and understandings of multidimensionality. And it gets us beyond the conditions and the pain and the traps of time. We are deeply conditioned by beliefs that hold us at the service of that entire platform, time. And time is beautiful. It's a gift. It's very relevant. And simultaneously, the paradox is that within time, all death happens. Within time, all growth happens. All beauty happens, and pain happens too. But when we can see that it is a tool, not a reality, just a helpful construct, those beings know that because they're not bound by time. they understand interdimensionality and they have been given unique roles that are assigned to them to continue to help us to realize that we are sovereign, to realize our freedom, to realize that we too can see through the veils of time, that clairvoyance should be really nothing unusual or out of the ordinary when you see through the veils of time. That's where we're all going. When I look deeply into the future, particularly 2100 and beyond into the future, everyone is doing what I'm doing. They're like, okay, well, that's not, you're doing that. My mother and I had this telepathic conversation the other day and she said, blah, blah. And it's like yesterday's business, no big deal. Why are we afraid of that, right? It's because thousands of years of religious paradigm has held us back. Thousands of years of unique educational paradigm has held us back. There have been so many conditions that we are undoing, and those beings, because they aren't confined by those conditions, can help us.
Lots of different questions. Just wondering if it's easiest to just speak them to yourself, or would you want to go into a process where we could speak to ask you questions and you could channel back specific answers and maybe even explain to the audience sort of how your specific method of channeling works?
Oh, a lot of methods of channeling. And the humans from the future method took a lot more training than the other methods. Let's just put it that way. And it's more recent. It's not something that I've been doing my whole life. To learn how to bilocate takes a trained mind, let's put it that way, and a mind that doesn't have fear. And I'm no different from anyone else in society insofar as having large amounts of fear. So it took me until age 40 to be able to bilocate, remote view, and actually transcend time and go into the future. That was not something I've been doing my entire life. There were a lot of steps to get there. And I had no idea, if you had told me that this is where this is going, from channeling Jesus and Mary and the galactic councils that work with me to transcending time and talking to someone in a different timeline, I would have told you that you've gone mad. But then it began to happen and I had questions. And it would kind of make sense looking back now, because I started in clear conduit channeling, just being awake. I'm aware of what the beings are saying and I'm repeating it back to you. They're giving me different things that they want to share, and I listen and I repeat. And they wouldn't even call that channeling. They call it listening and repeating. Say what I say, right? It's like, we're having a conversation. Can you please share my words? Right. Oh, don't say it differently than I would say it. Say it, just say it. So we started out there and just basic channeling and mediumship. Then we went into trance where they could take over. That took a lot more training as well, to kind of get ego out of the way so they could come in and utilize personality and utilize vocal inflections, utilize my brain and my mouth and my body. And I remember when I first started channeling, nothing would move. Like during this, like my hands would move. It would just be like this. I wouldn't even move. And then I started rocking back and forth. If you go back in some of my YouTubes, then it's like this, you know, that's because they're trying to move me and they're trying to loosen me up. And they remind me a little bit of my figure skating coach. I was trying to do something that was kind of dancey the other day. And she said, do you have hips? Move them. Right. Yeah. Cause it required that a little bit of a dance there. And I was scared, so I didn't. So fear does that in channeling to the human body, and you don't see a lot of movement in trance channels when they're not deeply trained into it. So time went on, and then it was like I could turn my head, I could move both hands, I was very much like I am today, full of gestures and bubbly, and if the being was serious, then I didn't move, but occasionally they would move, and if they would turn their head, and they would look around, and when they looked around, I remember viewing through my eyeballs. The first time that happened, I was with someone channeling for them, and the being turned my head and I just could see them through my own eyes, but it was them doing the seeing. And it was just something that's hard for me to explain, being someone seeing through your physical eyes, but eyelids were closed, but it didn't look that way. I could see them just like I'm seeing you and I here now. So then I started gathering these predictions. Like, you know, these are the people are wanting me to predict things. Okay, people are wanting to predict things. Is this just popular or should I really do it? It's kind of the question. And it's kind of the thing. And I'm kind of good at it. Should I do it just because I'm good at it? Is it really a part of my path? All the questions that a normal human would have. Well, yeah, you're good at it and do it. Okay, so we're going to do it. All right, world predictions began to happen and they were very accurate. But I didn't like what I was seeing. The world predictions started at age 24. And I really didn't want to see what I was seeing. I remember seeing the towers collapse in New York City days before it happened and trying to explain that to someone. There's just no way. So I had the obvious question that any person would have. And the question was, why are you showing me this? There's nothing I could do about it. And I just felt like I just wanted to cry all the time. There was a little bit of a mini depression that followed that for, well, more than a mini depression, to be honest, a very dark night of the soul for a couple of years between the ages of 24, 26 and a half, almost 27. I'm like, I don't want to predict these things anymore. Okay. Cause I don't want them to happen. And why am I telling you about it? You don't believe me anyway. You shame me. You persecute me. All the things happen. People don't want to hear what they don't want to hear, and then it happens. So I grew a following, but not necessarily because I was liked, but because they knew it was true. And standard people who can predict in a precognizant manner aren't given the positive things, because we're given the things that we need to change. We're not just given the things that are going to make you feel good, even though sometimes that can happen. And I get so relieved when that does happen. The majority of the predictions are, okay, here's a tsunami, Thailand. You know, here's some things coming, California. And it's not fun at all to see those things happen. And people just go, well, why, if you're here to uplift me, why are you telling me this crap? Which has been like the bane of my existence as a channel. So then I had to go through the stage of overcoming that. A lot of prayer, a lot of meditation, a lot of connection to myself and my guides, just crying to them. And I spent most of my 20s and 30s just crying to my guides, going, why? Nobody likes me. I have no friends. My family thinks I'm crazy, except my kids, you know, and my wife. My family thinks I'm crazy. What do I do? And then Humans from the Future happened. And the first time it happened, I went, aha, light bulb, you want me to go tell people this? And then the other side of it, oh God, they're going to hate it. You know, and they do. It's like, I'm notorious. I'm not absolutely loved. I'm just notorious. So I love every now and then when I could just go and do like a little Jesus Mary channeling just to bring back some love, because that makes me feel so good. But the majority of my work now is telling you the things that require change. So the process for bilocation looks like going into a trance, you follow an energy trail, and you circumvent time by following that energy trail. You go through what science would call a wormhole. And you have to also be, another thing that I learned was I can't be unhealthy in my body. The body had to be intensely pure. I can't drink. I can't do drugs. I can't eat bad food. None of that can happen. If I even have a hard time and decide to eat chocolate in bed while watching Netflix one night, the next day I'm going to struggle with channeling, right? So I had that part of it. Big part of it. Still ongoing. Still love chocolate. Still love chocolate and caffeine. We all have our vices. But couldn't drink a lot of caffeine for this because I didn't know if we were going to bilocate. So then I have to follow the energy trail, name the timeline, go into the timeline, meet people. That's another fun process because you're working with time. Archangel Raziel is the master of time. So if you tell him speed it up, he speeds it up, because it's not like I can go to sleep there, have a meal, and like take all the time in the world getting to know someone from the future so that they will actually talk to me. If I go into the near future, they don't even want to believe me, much less talk to me. So we have to speed up time and earn a friendship and then get someone to talk to us. I'm like, just in case I can convince you, just in case it helps the world, will you please talk to me? And the way that I evidence that is just say, touch my body, just shake my hand, go for it. If you don't believe me, when they shake my hand, if they touch me, that bilocated form disappears. and I return back to this form. As simple as that. And then instantaneously they believe me. They don't like it. They think they're going mad. Some people have tried to commit themselves into institutions because of it. And that's another story for another time. But it's not believable. And it's not easy to have this gift because I just don't know anyone else that's bilocating into the future. I know people that remote view both the future and the past, but a bilocation is a completely different experience because my body is there and here simultaneously. And I had to develop a belief system outside of time. I don't believe in time. I believe it's helpful, but I don't believe it's real. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I'm sleeping and in the bed 8 hours, I could be in the future for days, weeks, months, sped up in a way, speeding through so much time, getting to know people, and then coming back in a matter of only 8 hours here, and then hoping that I remember their stories. And that's how it works. Sometimes they take over when I'm there. Like another thing that tends to happen initially when I bilocate it, it's like they tend to just talk to other me and other me talks back to this me. But eventually this me will become like a little bit of a telephone that actually isn't really existing fully in any realm, which is why I can't do it for very long yet. Still training. Right now I've maxed it out with 3 hours that I've been able to do it. That's the longest amount of time I've been able to hold this while doing that without just falling off the chair and being absolutely utterly exhausted. But this form becomes a telephone, so if you will, like a transmutation device. So the being from the future then just talks to other me. That other me tends to just come straight in a way. And it's like, this me isn't there. So if I bilocated you, you would talk through me and I would have your personality. Eventually it's like you would talk through this body, this voice, this personality, but it would be expressed more as you. The more I got to know your personality, the more often we did that, you would just take over this form and it would be like I didn't exist. So I cannot fear death.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And that's been such a big hold on humanity, hasn't it? This fear of death. Like we, on our life-death series that we held, we dove into it. And, you know, my father passed away just a few months ago, and I'm the only oddball in my family who's not grief-stricken, because I feel like there's so much more. In some instances, I'm being completely honest, I'm happy for him, because I feel like there's a lot of bullshit going on here that my dad just wouldn't do very well with. But that fear of death has been such a stronghold on humanity, where I feel like there's so much more to explore and to get curious about and to wonder and to open up to, that death might not even be the worst thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people that the Council of Nine, that my favorite spirit team that I talk to, they say that Earth is grad school, not boot camp. So when I'm whining and complaining about being here, they're like, it's because you are mastered. And not just you, anyone who is here. It is a privilege to be here. People, you should see my perspective as a medium. When I see through the veil, there are beings lined up to be here. And here we are going, oh my gosh, you know, the government and the this and the that and the toxicity and the control and the lack of sovereignty. Okay, that we're changing that. We are. I need everyone to believe that we are changing that. This isn't about burying your head in the sand and pretending that that doesn't exist, because it definitely does. If despite the fact that ego isn't real, despite the fact that this is an illusory environment, it's still incredibly capturing and beautiful and realistic. And if someone comes and stabs us in the chest right now, we're going to feel it, and it is going to hurt, right? And that's just the nature of this reality. And simultaneously, it's going to bring us so much. So I'm not afraid of it either.
Pamela, what's your perspective on ego? What is ego?
It's a tool. It's like a filter. You know, when you drive a car, this is the analogy that the council gives us all the time, that the body is just like a body of a car. Without it, the car does not travel down the highway, and we want to go far. So we have to take care of the body of the car. We can't go banging it into trees and crashing it everywhere. Like, you know, in this analogy, we don't crash our car into trees and just like smack it and say bad things about it. And we don't go up to our car and we're like, oh, I hate you, and I don't love you, and you're fat today. Like, we can't. We love our car. We want it. Like, people love their car more than they love their bodies. They come up and you see these car enthusiasts patting on the, you know, the hood of the car, and they're like, oh, hey, love you, man. Let's go. You're the best car. And they name their cars. And I wish we treated our bodies that well, because they're vehicles of wonder and grace and light. And it's going to take us far. But the ego is like the engine of the car, right? And we need it. And the gas that we put in the car, well, that's everything. Thought streams, emotions, food, fears, or love. That's all gas. That all feeds us. So if you're going to put dirty gas in the engine of the car, the ego is going to try to make sputtering noises and kind of, you know, filter it out. Or it'll toxically spit it out in a way that just bursts the oil gaskets. All sorts of things are going to happen, right? You can't keep putting dirty fuel in the car. Or bad oil. Like, you have to change the oil too. That's what meditation is for. I mean, I know we're giving a lot of practical analogies here, but the situation is like that. And you need the body and the engine and the gas and the driver. Yeah, that's spirit.
Mm.
That's spirit.
You know, it's funny. We've met quite a few other, should we call them family members at this point, who have around the same time that we started this podcast in 2019 also started their venture of doing something more out there, more public, that could reach more people. And, you know, spirit in spirit was the same word that was used by so many of these. I mean, John and Kristen were just interviewed, and their episode is out now. I feel like the download of spirit is coming through the veil more strongly. And I wonder if this is a question we could bring to you, or if we should bring to the Council of Nine with regards to what is exactly happening in our world at this time. They call it the time of the Great Awakening. They call it the time of the Great Shift, or the time of the Red Sun. And I wanted to kind of explore this a little bit more. What is it that we're exactly in? What is physically happening? What is happening energetically? Who are the beings involved in that sort of these sort of questions? I wonder who you would advise to bring those questions to.
There are so many councils involved, not just one. So there's my council, the Council of Nine. There's another group that just calls themselves the Council. There's like the Saint Germain and Council of Adamus. There's the Pleiadian Council. There's the Andromedan Council. There's a Council of 11. There's a Council of One. There's like so many beings have gathered and garnered an interest in this beautiful thing we call ascension. But it's not about lifting up or going anywhere. It's about taking in what we already are and enlightening this entire planet, the entire construct. So what they're saying here from the energetic standpoint, it is becoming physical. And this is why people are having what they experience as ascension symptoms and whatnot, because if you have light coming into the three inner ear bones, those tiny little bones, they become more porous. They expand. Then you have ringing of the ears. You have static in the eyes. If the cones and the rods are affected by light coming in, and we have more light than ever. We have more light from the solar consciousness. We have more light from, and that's the entire consciousness of light around us that we emit perpetually. That's coming from us. Our collective soul, we don't just have individual souls. We are a family, as you so beautifully put. And we emit that light constantly. But we've been in darkness for so long. We've been pretending for so long that there's this veil of amnesia that's just been there, you know, for millions of years. And the council has called that the great forgetting. We started out remembering everything that we are. We started out with a full 5D form, a light body, similar to what people see when I bilocate. It's just a light body. We started out in a way to experience, it was a very non-dualistic world, but that's what people talk about in the Bible when they talk about the Garden of Eden. And then when they talk about these metaphorical stories about eating from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, that was our choice to separate. Our choice to experience something different. So then we went through the Kali Yuga and many stages of separation and darkening, right? And understanding the great abyss, understanding everything that has to do with the natural consequences of separation. Now we're doing something different. For the first time, we have what the council calls the middle way. We have all the darkness, all the forgetting, and then people awakening and wanting oneness, wanting to return back to that original state of purity.
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.